The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
Good evening. It's a few days, a week, a little more, before Shavuos. I thought that in talking about issues of parenting, to try to review some of the major issues in chinuch today. We all know that it's a responsibility of a father, shinantum levonecho, teaching Torah to his children, the mitzvah of chinuch for the children. The mother also plays a very unique role. The Rabbeinu Yoina says, pshat kui seymar lebeis Yaakov v'sagei lebnei Yisroel, that when the Moshe Rabbeinu was told to teach the Torah to Klal Yisrael, he was told to teach the Beis Yaakov, the women first. The women were taught the Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu even before he taught the men. And many different pshotim are found in Chazal. But Rabbeinu Yoina says that the pshat is because ultimately the Masoiras HaTorah, the passing on of Torah from one generation to the next, is really in the hands of the mother. That's why she was taught the Torah first. Why? Because the mother has the child at the most critical, developmental, formative times, the first years of their lives. And at that time, the midos are instilled. The emes, and chesed, and savlonus, and rachmonus, and all of the sensitivities, they are developed at that early stage, for the most part, in the interaction with the mother. And since the Torah is the most critical ingredient in its successful transmission to future generations, is this perfection and development of Midas Tovis, and therefore the mother is ultimately responsible for the Maseiras HaTorah, and therefore she was taught the Torah first. So that both mothers and fathers have a major role in the chinuch of their children today. And even though we send our children to Moses HaChinuch and we oftentimes pay fortunes for that chinuch, and as good and as superior as that chinuch may be, the ultimate role of mechanchim, teaching children, whether it's the midas or the hanhogas or the halochas of Torah, is left to the parents, is be'ika, the responsibility of the parents. And therefore, it's important to review some of the major issues and problems in chinuch today. I have an outline of 10 issues. I'd like to review them briefly, just as an overview, and then try to deal with some of them specifically, and hopefully to finish next week in time for the Kabbalah HaTorah. The order is not, it's lav dafka, but I think the issues are very, very critical. One issue that's very weighs very heavily in chinuch today is the pressure that our children feel. Pressure is a positive motivator and a very, oftentimes, very negative, destructive force. A little bit of pressure, the right amount of pressure, can sometimes be very invigorating. Extensive pressure, beyond the amount that normally this particular child can handle, can sometimes be devastating and cause them just to give up altogether. So this is an issue. This is an issue for parents from the home. This is an issue for pressure that they feel at school and yeshiva. And this is also a religious pressure that they feel just by dint of the fact that they have responsibilities and obligations. And it must at least be understood. We'll try to elaborate a little bit more. But as a serious issue, and the rule of thumb is that for most developing children, less pressure is safer, even though sometimes certain kids could handle more pressure. But if you're not sure, and sure means 100% sure, less pressure or reducing certain pressures is usually safer. Another thing that's also very significant is as we've succeeded in chinuch and as we've developed an establishment mentality in terms of the frum community, some place in that area, in that process, the emphasis on individuality, on each child being different, on each one having unique personality, unique needs, unique deus, unique way of thinking and looking at things, and interests and talents and so forth, seems sometimes to get a little bit clouded to the detriment of our children. Another major issue is the sense of love and respect and positive relationships that they feel with us as parents. They must feel that love, they must know that love, they must be confident in that love. They must sense that respect that we have for them, and they must feel a close relationship with us, because in the context of that relationship, we can influence them very strongly. Without that relationship, our influence wanes and becomes quite remote. The type of learning that generates excitement in learning, appreciation for learning, for Torah learning, involvement with Torah learning, is an interactive learning experience. The difference between a lecture, a speech, a Dvar Torah at the table, or an interactive discussion involving our children can be the difference between their understanding or not understanding, their appreciation or not appreciation, and their sense of being Machshiv Torah, which is a very important nekuda. Another issue, a major issue in chinuch of our children, is the ability, the freedom that they feel to ask questions. We must encourage questions and answers. We must encourage questions and offer answers. Because if they don't have that sense of openness, of freedom to discuss what's on their mind, oftentimes there will be things on their mind which can be quite confusing to them, quite detrimental to their learning, to their Yiddishkeit, to their observance of mitzvahs. And without the freedom to discuss, and discussing at home, at the Shabbos table, or private discussion, if that's more appropriate, is something that's critical to their good feelings with their Yiddishkeit and their learning and their development. It's quite clear that we must understand the needs of our children to be happy, what the definition of happiness is, and what makes them happy and allows them or allows us to help them fulfill this need. A happy child is, for the most part, a safe child. An unhappy child is a time bomb just waiting to explode. We do have to take into consideration that criticism is often not the best way to communicate a message of truth, a message of correction, a message of change, and probably it's one of the worst ways, and that must be put in perspective. Our children may not know enough, sense enough, feel enough, understand enough what it means to have a relationship with Hashem, something which is very, very critical, because it's that relationship that anchors them in a life of Torah mitzvahs. If all that they do is just for us, or because of the environment, or because of the friends, or because of the social pressures, then at some point the basis is quite shaky. But if it's based on a relationship with Hashem, it has an anchor that that can weather storms and even uncomfortable and tragic events. But this relationship keeps it going. They must have a sense of the reasons and benefits for the mitzvahs that they perform. If they don't have a sense of why do I do this, and what's the benefit, and how is it going to make my quality of life better, how is it going to make me happy, then the mitzvahs do not keep, they don't maintain that deep commitment and connection to them, and oftentimes under pressure and difficulties they can be negatively impacted and drift. And the last one is a sense of knowledge of the truth of Torah Min HaShemayim. They have to know that the Torah is true. Besides just being beneficial and having reasons and understanding the benefits, but it has to be truth, the knowledge that it's true, not even just the belief, but the knowledge, information that gives them the confidence in the knowledge that Torah min Hashemayim, that the Torah is in fact from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this is a reality. This is an outline of some of the basic issues. I'd like to begin now, and hopefully Be'ez Hashem continue next time, to go into some of them in a little bit more detail. Pressure. Pressure is something that is explosive. Remember the old-fashioned pressure cookers. You know, you can leave it a little bit too long on the fire, a little too much pressure, and it explodes. And many of our children today are on the verge of or have exploded from the pressure. And what's strange about pressure is that we don't realize, number one, how much pressure we put our children under. So many parents say, oh, come on, there's no pressure in my home. My kids, they do what they want, they're free, I'll never forget with one of my sons who was already married at the time, learning in Kollel, and I was bragging a little bit and priding myself out. For a guy where I come from, I was pretty liberal and not too pressurizing to my children. And my son looked at me and in disbelief. And he says, what are you talking about? He says, we knew how much you were against certain things, that even if you let us do it, we couldn't enjoy it. There are pressures that come out, exude from within us, that we're not even aware that we're sending those messages. Now, we do have to educate our children. We have to be mechanech them. We have to guide them. We have to teach them right from wrong. But we have to be very aware that they are super sensitive to pressure, and they can internalize a simple, much like the person who doesn't want to hear a certain message, and he says, "Why are you yelling at me?" And really, I'm whispering. But to him, it sounds like yelling because he's so afraid, he's so overwhelmed. Pressure is overwhelming. To the more intelligent and more sensitive children, it's even more overwhelming. And there are these subtle parental pressures from home and from school as well. And sometimes they're not so subtle. Sometimes they're very, very overt. And they can, to many, not to every, some kids have the ability to just let it roll off their back. And some use it constructively. But to some, it's just overwhelming and it just chases them in the wrong direction. And we have to realize that the Torah itself is a pressure. The Torah itself is a pressure. We may have mentioned here way back that on the mitzvah of the first of the Aseret Hatzniyot, so the Ramban brings a michilta, and he says it's a moshel to a melech. He comes into a city, and the people say, "Melech, gzor aleinu gzeiros, make rules for us." And the melech answers, "If you're not going to accept my malchus, you're not going to accept me as the melech, how are you going to keep my rules?" Shaila is, they asked for the rules. They're accepting him as Melech. They want the rules. Please, gzor aleinu gzeiros. The answer is, and that's why it says first, I'm the one who took you out of Mitzrayim. Now, lo yelech, I'm going to tell you what the rules are. Begin to tell you the rules. It seems that unless, before we're focused and aware of the extent of the pressure that is upon us, there's an abstract kabbalah so malchus shemayim. You're the Melech, that's it. What am I supposed to do? Nothing. Right now, nothing. Just recognize I'm the Melech. If we do that, it's possible to keep the rules, or it's more possible. It's still difficult. But you see for me how difficult it is. We ask for rules, but the minute the rules will be forthcoming, say, how can you keep? You won't be able to keep the rules, because you didn't, in abstract, first, accept me as Melech. I'm the Melech. We're not discussing the details of the rules. There's no pressure yet. But just the abstract, you're the Melech? Okay, now we have to listen to what you have to say. The religious pressure, especially the religious pressure, is extremely, extremely strong. And you know, there's something else about that pressure. It doesn't really leave many options. You know, if Judaism were a culture and somebody is not happy with it, they would look, and find a culture, another culture. But if it's life, if it's truth, then if it doesn't work for them, if they feel overwhelmed with it, they have to deny it, they have to fight it, they have to go away from it, because it's not just a culture you could find an alternative and be happy. You have your culture, I got my culture. This is life. And therefore they have to negate and deny, and it causes many, many serious problems. talk about individuality. Individuality is something that is very important, and just let it be said with two comments that we find in the words of Al-Chachomim. When Moshe Rabbeinu was informed of the imminence of his passing, he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a successor. And he asked for four items on the short list of requests. And the first was, Vayomer Moshe El Hashem, Parshas Korach, Yifkei Hashem Elokei Horuchos L'chol Bosor Ish Alo Edo. Hashem Elokei Horuchos, the God of the spirits of all flesh, should appoint a man, a leader of this congregation. And Rashi seems to be bothered by the language, Hashem Elokei Horuchos L'chol Bosor. So he says, Moshe's tefillah went like this, Rabbeinu Shalalem, Golui V'yodu Alefanech, you know very well that each and every individual is different. Appoint a leader, Sheyuchal Lizboil Kol Echod Ve'echod Lefi Daitoi. Appoint a leader who has the ability to tolerate. It's a tolerance. It's not so easy. It's easier to lump everybody together as one. Each person according to his own personality, according to his own thinking, according to his own deus. This was the first item on the short list for a leader, not of a class of, not of a family of 15 or 10 kids, not of a class of 30 kids, not of a school of 1,000 kids, but of a Klal Yisrael of a few million nefoshes. The leader's first requirement has to be that he can tolerate each one according to his own individuality. Individuality is very critical. Everybody is different. Kishem shein partzufeim doim ezoi lezoi, kachin deuseim, just like their faces are different, so too their thinking is different, and everybody has to be reached in a different way, spoken to a different way, dealt with in a different way, and has to, some people feel good in one thing, some people are successful in another thing, some people can feel good about themselves if they do this, others if they do something else. This must all be taken into consideration. So much so, that the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, I believe it's in the fourth parak of Sanhedrin, the Mishnah says, what's off-quoted, everybody quotes it regularly, the concept of Chayev kol echod ve'echod loymar kol oylom nivra b'shvili. Each and every individual should say, the whole world is created for me. That's the attitude we should have. Hashem created the world for one person. He would have created for me, for you, for everybody. The whole world was created for me. I'm worthy to be the center and the purpose and the focal point of creation. What we tend to forget is that right the line before this, the Mishnah talks about the difference between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and a boss of Adam. It says when a boss of Adam makes a chosam, when he makes a mold, then everything comes out of that mold is exactly the same. Not so HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He created the whole world from the mold of Adam and Chava. But each and every person looks different. Everybody is different, even though they came from that same mold. Lefikoch, says the Mishnah, therefore, Chayev kol echod ve'echod loymar kol oylom nivra b'shvili. Because of the fact that everybody looks different, therefore, we are chayev to say kol oylom nivra b'shvili. Seems very strange. It's because of that. Yes. It seems that if we could not, if we do not recognize our own unique individuality, what's wrong if we all looked alike? We could still say kol olam nivra b'shvili. Just we wouldn't look alike. We all look alike, so what? But each one, it's the same thing. I look different, now I can't say it. If I feel that sense of individuality, I look different, I'm different. Each one is a person, is a unique individual. Now I can feel that uniqueness leading me to say the whole world was created for me. But if not, I can't feel it. And if individuality is necessary to feel so good about myself, to feel that gadlus ha'odom, to feel that the world could have been created or was created just for me, then individuality is an extremely important ingredient that we must be makpid on in the development of our children, because that's something that can really give them that self of, that sense of self-confidence and feeling good about themselves. Love, respect, and relationship. Well, parents love children. There's nothing to talk about. Yet we live in a generation where our children are not 100% certain that their parents love them, nor how much they love them. And this is something that we must constantly communicate, not with the superficial love you, but with the time, with the effort, with the concern, with the as the Sipurnu defines love, sheyismach ha'oyhev b'malas ha'nehav, the one who loves rejoices in the qualities of the person he loves and in satisfying that person. And our children must sense this in word and in deed, how much we love them. If they sense how much we love them, the power of communication, the channels of communication that love opens for us are infinite. But they have to, and we must maintain it, and we must focus on it, and we must communicate it in every way possible. And the same thing goes with respect. You know, we want our children to respect us. The best way is to model the behavior called respect. And even more than that, that makes them feel good about themselves. If my parents respect me, that means I'm something, I'm someone. I can feel good. I'm worthy. And that's something that's critical. Also, a relationship. The most powerful means of communicating values is relationship. If we have a close relationship, a social relationship, we talk together, we're friendly, we do things together, we eat together. That's one of the things the Rambam says, Uboy Sidbok, which is, it seems the Rambam says, part of it is the ability to accept and believe the truths that Talmid Chachamim tell us. We eat and drink with them, we do business with them, we interact with them socially. These interactions on the part of parent and child create the channels with which our children are ready to believe in what we have to say to them, and what we, in the values that we communicate, in the ideas, in the hashkofas, because they have that ongoing, open and strongly bonded relationship, and that is the conduit to communication and giving over values and teachings and directives. We mentioned about interactive learning. You know, I guess the home is not a classroom. Sometimes the learning with a child is b'chavrusa. Shabbos table is often a place of learning, but interactive learning is the key. You know, I'm always fond of quoting Ben Franklin. He said, "Tell me I forget, show me I remember, involve me I understand." Involvement brings understanding, and understanding of learning brings excitement, brings appreciation, brings a sense of its importance, of its uniqueness, of its relevance, because I understand it, I penetrate. And part of interactive learning is questions and answers. Part of it is challenging. The Shabbos table should not just be a scene of repeating Divrei Torah and nobody paying any attention, everybody fidgeting in, can't wait until they bring the chont. It should be an interactive learning experience. A question, a challenge, a kasha from some place that not a kasha that necessarily needs outside information, but one that you can think, that needs thinking, that needs analysis, and we can think, and maybe some contest. There are people that sit with little candies at the table and, you know, dole them out for those that give the right answer, but it shouldn't just be the answer to a question which was memorized. That's also important, you know, especially on certain levels, but at whatever age, and sometimes even at the youngest ages, we can challenge our children to think. The learning experience becomes interactive, becomes meaning, becomes understood, and becomes passionate, because I'm involved, and I enjoy that involvement. I become creative, and I rise to the occasion, and that's a benefit. Just one more. And that is encouraging questions and answers. Today, more than ever, our children have a lot of questions. The age-old questions of suffering in the world. The more modern questions, you know, there's the suffering of the righteous. And there's today questions about the behavior of some of the alleged righteous. And kids have questions. Why this one did this? Why this teacher did this? Why this parent did this? Why this Rebbe did this? You know, they have questions. And we can't take the attitude that a shegetz asks questions. Someone who asks such questions doesn't belong in this home. I'm embarrassed that my child asked such a question. Questions are issues that are of concern to our children, and they are relevant and essential to their development. They must see that there are answers. They must see that we're willing to validate them as having asked good questions. They must see that we're not afraid of their questions. And they must see that even if we don't have an answer to their question, we're willing to say, "I do not know," rather than to make up stories and even lie to them. And we'll say, "I don't know, but we must find out. It's a very good question. It's a very important question." And what we're going to do about it is research. We'll look it up together. We'll ask somebody. We'll figure it out. We'll find it out. But it's taken seriously. When the question is taken seriously, the questioner feels taken seriously. The questioner feels more secure in the subject matter that they're asking about because they see an openness and a willingness to deal with the issues, which is very encouraging to them and inspires them to have confidence in what they're learning and in the person of whom they are asking these questions. And even if we don't have an answer, you know, I don't know is a good answer. The famous story that I heard from Rav Chatzkel Abramsky, who was a dayan in London for many years, says the first day he was on the new job, and the old dayan had retired and had advised the kehillah to bring in this young dayan. And the first day, the Rosh HaKol comes to ask him a shayla, and he says, "I don't know." Simple shayla. He was very perturbed. He goes to the old dayan. What is this business, this rov, this genius you got for us? He doesn't know the answer to a simple question. And the old dayan was very perturbed, and he calls up Rabbi Abramsky, and he says, "Hayitochen, you don't know the answer to this question?" So Rabbi Abramsky says, "Of course I know the answer to the question. But the first lesson that the Jews of London had to learn is the Rav doesn't have to know the answer to all questions." It's also a lesson. But it's a lesson that teaches honesty, because I admit what I don't know, but it also teaches this sense of, but I want to know, and I will look into it, and I will do research, and we will do research, and we'll figure out what the answer is. And this is something that our children have to hear, have to feel, have to know. They have to know that we have enough confidence in our teachings that we're willing to be open for questions. When they feel that we're not willing to entertain questions, they oftentimes, sometimes, believe it's suspicious. Why not? What's wrong? Why won't they answer a question? Why won't they entertain a question? Why are they so afraid of questions? And it does us damage in many different ways. So this encouraging of questions and answers, and the ability to give answers, and I guess it means as parents that we have to do some homework sometimes, and maybe we should be trained in some of these issues that our children may be asking, religious hashkofa, you know, that type of thing. But that's something I think that's also very critical. And Be'ez Hashem, next time we'll continue with the other five topics that we discussed, which was happiness, criticism, relationship with Hashem, appreciating the benefits of mitzvahs, and knowing the information which can show us the truth of Torah min Hashamayim.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-one.org. That's priority-1.org. Where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.